Hey guys, and welcome to episode 192 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now this is a story-based episode, and in it I chat with Zoe Homanoff, who has kindly agreed to share her OCD story with us. So thank you to her, and if the podcast helps you anyway, has helped you in any way, it would mean a lot to me if you could leave a review wherever you listen to it, as it helps me reach more people. So thanks a lot for listening, and here is Zoe. On the podcast today, I have Zoe Homanoff, who has kindly agreed to share her OCD story with us. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. And as you know, I always like to give people's OCD stories in as little as much detail. So yeah, please share away.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with OCD when I was, I think, around 12 years old. I had just turned 12, but I had had symptoms since I was about 8 years old. That's as early as I can retrace the steps. Mm. And I think my OCD started off as it was very much focused on emetophobia, which is the fear of throwing up. So I was very anxious about anything to do with throwing up. And then it kind of evolved, as many people with OCD say it does. Yeah. But it started off as compulsions around like holding my breath and counting and tapping. Mm. And then it started to evolve into organizing everything in my room. I would be up for hours by the time I was in sixth grade, just straightening everything and having specific rituals around nighttime. Mm. And that's when my parents started to notice, okay, something might be off. So I had been seeing a therapist at the time for just generalized anxiety, but I finally opened up to her about the OCD because I didn't really know what it was, but I knew it wasn't normal. But at the same time, I think this is common for a lot of people with OCD, but their OCD is like, don't tell anybody that it's going on. So I eventually did tell people what was going on, and they had kind of noticed as well that something was off. And that was when I started seeing a psychiatrist for the first time. Mm. And it all kind of spiraled out of I had been having trouble with other things at the time too, because it was sixth grade and so it's the start of middle school and all that fun stuff. Mm. But I think going to the psychiatrist, who I actually still see to this day, she was able to figure out what I needed treatment-wise, and it was really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, thank you for sharing. And what was, so when you said about OCD kind of said you can't share this, and you're right, you know, I hear this all the time, it's something I experience. What was the kind of worry, or what was being kind of implied to you as why you couldn't share it?
For me, I think it started off as if I shared it, something bad would happen, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I was worried that I had kind of, my OCD kind of stemmed from like a religious aspect at first, actually, where I was like, if I share this, then God will punish me. So I didn't have specific rituals around like scrupulosity the way some people do, but it did take on a religious aspect because I was going to Hebrew school at the time. And I think that was where my OCD kind of latched onto, like, oh, if you do this, you will anger God.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I asked that because although everyone kind of gets that worry, it differs on the theme and what they're...
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting. Thank you. And so you saw the psychiatrist in middle school?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I still see her to this day.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And did she acknowledge that it was OCD?
Yes, she did. And the interesting thing was that I had had a hunch earlier than her telling me that, because my sixth grade teacher shared a story about somebody with OCD to us. I don't even remember the context, but my friends later on said, Zoe, that sounds exactly like you. And I was like, oh my God, it does. So I had that kind of fear, like, okay, maybe this is something more serious than what I've been thinking it was.
Yeah.
And then I went to a training later that year for a special needs training for, I was working on something for my bat mitzvah. I was volunteering with special needs kids, and they did mention OCD as something the kids might be dealing with. And when they mentioned the symptoms once again, I said, wow, that sounds a lot like what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
But I remember telling my mom that, and she said, I don't know. I'm not sure. And I think she was afraid to admit that it might be true. But then when we got the diagnosis, everything kind of fell into place.
Yeah, fair enough. And I so I guess when you got the diagnosis, it almost wasn't a shock. Is that
No, it
fair?
wasn't. It was probably more shocking to my parents, I think, than to me.
Okay. So when you got that diagnosis, what was that like? How did it feel?
Yeah, I think it felt a little bit like a relief, like someone was finally hearing me for the first time or understanding what I was going through. And also the fact that there was a name to it, it made me feel like I wasn't going crazy.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you're right. The kind of name gives it normalcy. Like it's a thing we're aware of as opposed to we don't have a clue what's going on for you, which is scarier. Okay, cool. And then therapy wise, have you done anything like that?
Yeah, I've done a lot actually in the past 10 years or so that since I've been diagnosed. I started with cognitive behavioral therapy, and I saw somebody from the time I was about 12 and a half until I was in college. So that was the same therapist for a very long time. And we mostly did ERP together. And I actually, the interesting thing was I tackled almost everything but the fear of throwing up at first, because that
Okay.
was just
Too
untouchable. It
much.
was so scary. So I tackled all the compulsions that weren't surrounding that. So it was like the straightening and the organizing. And eventually I did tackle that. And that was, I think, by the time I was entering college, I finally was able to tackle that. But I did ERP for a while. And then I actually moved on to dialectical behavioral therapy when I was, I think, my senior year of college. I finally got a recommendation for that, and that was for more emotion regulation, that in addition to the OCD.
And what made you or what helped you finally get to the point where you could face the emetophobia worries?
Yeah, I think it was that fed up sort of feeling by the end where I was realizing, you know what, I don't want to live my life in fear. And also realizing that if I didn't do anything, kind of like with the other things that I had worked on, they were just going to get worse. And I didn't want to live my life running from something. And the other thing was, I do work with kids, and people kept pointing out to me, you know, kids get sick all the time. You're going to have to deal with it sooner or later. And I realized that if I was going to work in the field of childcare or psychology or anything like that, I needed to face this fear.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's quite motivating. So DBT, how did you find that for the emotional stuff?
I found it really useful. I'm somebody that likes set sort of, not necessarily rules, but set
Structure.
ideas and structure exactly. So I found that the DBT lingo and the DBT model was really useful for me. So I did it when I was still in Pennsylvania for college. So I don't go there anymore because I'm not in Pennsylvania anymore. But I found the therapist really useful, not just for the OCD, but for just everything. It was very all-encompassing. And again, the structure really helped me with the OCD, with other stuff I was dealing with. Like I suffer from panic disorder as well. And I found that that actually, even though that's not what DBT is meant to tackle necessarily, it really helped with that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that's interesting. Thank you. And I always like to ask whether there was any kind of lifestyle changes you made or anything you did that helped, like someone said the other day about knitting and journaling, anything like that as well that you enjoy.
Yeah, I actually, the funny thing is I knit as well. And I think I have a feeling I know who's the knitter also because I've seen their posts, but I actually really love knitting, and I found a club actually in
Oh, cool.
college where it was just the knitting and crocheting club, and that helped me get out of my comfort zone with friends and open up to people, and we all would just sit around and knit, and it was wonderful. And we even had sales for charity, and we would sell our knitted and crocheted items, and half the proceeds would go to charity, half would go back to us as a club. And it was a really great environment. I really love a lot of art things. So I like to draw, I like photography, and I like writing. the one thing that has been difficult lately actually is that on and off my OCD tends to get in the way of what I like to do creatively. So it's hard once I start something, I usually can't stop what I'm doing, and then it becomes more of a chore. So especially with drawing, I've found that I get so obsessed with perfection that I can't enjoy what I'm doing, and that's something I still struggle with to this day.
You know, thank you for sharing. I also noticed you've done some writing, right? So we'll talk about your blog in a moment, but you've also written some pieces outside of that. Is that correct?
Yes.
What's that process been like of, I guess, being more vulnerable and sharing that with a wider audience?
I think it's been really therapeutic because for so long I was bottling everything up and so afraid to share what I was going through. And then as I began to share, it was almost cathartic with how open I was feeling. And then once I started sharing, it was almost like I couldn't stop. I was realizing not only am I helping myself by being more open, I'm helping other people by telling them that they're not alone.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. Okay, so before we get onto your blog, I've got a couple of questions. Was there like a light bulb moment or a big epiphany in your recovery that something just clicked and made sense?
Yeah, actually, I think that was probably in the DBT program. There was this unit that they had on emotions where they said that you have to name it to tame it. And all of a sudden, it clicked that for so long I had been avoiding saying, this is anxiety, this is OCD. I would just say, you know what, I'm not dealing with this, I'm not dealing with this. And then eventually it would come to a head and I'd have to face facts that I was dealing with the anxiety. And then when I started saying, okay, I'm anxious right now, and that's okay, that was when my recovery started really taking shape.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Yeah, so kind of labeling it, acknowledging it, and accepting it that it's there. And is that something that technique, is that something you apply beyond anxiety as well to other emotions?
Oh, definitely. Like when I'm feeling, especially when I'm feeling really upset or hurt, sometimes I would also say to myself, okay, I'm feeling this way right now and it won't last. It's just a temporary feeling, possibly for a long-term effect, but I know myself and I know that I can bounce back. And that's something that I still struggle with the black and white thinking of this is the end all be all. I feel this way and I will never feel anything else. But still working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. No, thank you for sharing. With emotions, I like the analogy of, or metaphor, I always get too confused, of emotions being kind of like a wave. Sometimes the waves can be ginormous, but it's still just a wave and it will pass.
Oh, for sure. They used to call that urge surfing sometimes, like with the wave. So if you had an urge, that was a negative coping mechanism. And they would say, just surf the wave. And so, sort of notice the different curves of that urge. And then, when it starts to peak, just let it peak and then it will eventually dip.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Okay, yeah. So, similar question then is, was there like a big roadblock on your journey? And if so, how did you overcome it?
I think one of the roadblocks was college, actually. I don't know if this is, I think this is true for most people, but I'm not 100% sure. But transitions tend to be really hard for me with my OCD. So when I go through some sort of big change, the OCD comes to realize that I am vulnerable. And so it gets worse. So I noticed that my OCD was definitely worse my first years of college. And part of the problem was also I was still seeing my therapist from back in my hometown, so or around my hometown area, and we were using phone therapy, which was not effective at all for me. And I was so afraid to change therapists because I'd been seeing this therapist for so much of my life that I sort of ignored the signs that the phone therapy wasn't working out. And so I eventually had to change therapists, but once I did, I realized that I had almost wasted a couple years of not being treated in a way because the phone therapy was so ineffective.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you. And was that just like telephone, or was it like Skype where you could see, like we can
it's
see?
Just telephone.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you miss a lot when you can't see the other person. Like, yeah, ideally being in a room with someone, but secondary to that, like video calling can be quite useful. But yeah, just a phone. I mean, I'm sure it works for some people, but I can understand why you had a tough time with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you finally kind of make the jump and think, okay, I have to get someone close to me now?
The sad thing was actually, I had almost like a falling out with my therapist.
Okay.
He kind of got fed up with my lack of progress and he started getting angrier with me.
Mm.
He started saying things that were more belligerent and belittling. And okay. I finally realized if my therapist doesn't want to either believe in me or doesn't want to act like they believe in me, then what's the point of the therapist?
Yep.
And that made me realize that if I feel worse every time I'm talking to my therapist, that's not an effective relationship.
Yeah.
So I took the initiative at last and said to my parents, I need to find somebody else.
Yeah.
And I think that was hard for them to hear too, because we had all trusted this therapist very much. So with my recovery, I had been with him since the beginning of my OCD treatment, but it was definitely time for a change.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that that happened, but glad that it kind of worked out. And yeah, the next therapist was great for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So your blog, This Is OCD. Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I started the blog when I was in college. So I started in 2015, right after my freshman year. And I had been on Tumblr, which is the system that I use to blog from. I'd been on Tumblr for about 4 or 5 years before. And I started off as just somebody lurking and blogging occasionally, but I didn't really have a purpose to my blog. And I noticed very clearly that there were a lot of recovery blogs out there. And most of them focused around eating disorders and depression. And that's great that there are so many resources out there for that. But I also noticed that at the time in 2015, there were almost no blogs on anxiety or OCD, or at least that were central and focusing on OCD. So I made a blog out of what I felt like was a need for some sort of community and resource for people with OCD. And I made the blog, I think, in May of 2015. And that was right after I had ended my freshman year. And I made the blog also because I had noticed in college and in high school that everybody said, I'm so OCD about this. And that's so OCD of you. And I got very frustrated that people didn't know how to understand that what they were saying was harmful or just plain wrong.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take a more educational approach because I realized that anger and frustration gets you nowhere with that kind of thing. And people don't mean to be hurtful most of the time. Like when I would tell people, you know, that's actually really hurtful, they would say, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize. And it's not a matter of, they're not trying to target people with OCD. They're just using a lingo that most people have picked up on just through social media and word of mouth. So I made the blog also as kind of a protest and yet educational resource for people to realize that OCD is more than just an adjective.
Yeah, no, absolutely good point. That's a good way to deal with people. Like you said, they're not, most of the time, not trying to be mean. They just don't know any better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and most people do respond well. And if they don't, it's probably because they're embarrassed. Okay, so what will people find when they go to your blog? What type of content?
Yeah, I have like three different sort of types of content on there. I have one thing is like my positivity posts. I call them the smile posts. And I reblog a lot of posts that just have positive messages, motivational messages. And I do avoid some of the posts that many positivity blogs will repost, which is like just smile or just be happy, because I find that those are actually really not useful for people with more serious mental illness, because sometimes people will just say just be happy and it's not that simple.
Yeah.
But I do post things like, you know, little motivational you can do it sort of photos, images, etc., because I find that sometimes we all need a reminder that we are stronger than we think.
Absolutely.
And I also make a lot of humor sort of posts. So I have posts that I call the Sassmaster posts, and I make sort of they're funny, but they're also a little bit biting at times, but not in a angry way, more like a, I understand that OCD is a terrible, terrible illness, and at the same time, we can laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
So sometimes I will make posts about different types of OCD that just making like a little comment. I usually use like a GIF or some sort of funny picture with them. They're kind of like memes, I guess, if you could call them that. And I tend to get a lot of people's responses from them that are positive, where people say, you know, I need to learn to laugh at myself too. Mm-hmm. And it's more like we're not laughing at the disorder, but we're laughing with the community.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that there is a lighter side to this. And I think humor really helps people like myself cope with some of the more serious aspects of the illness, actually. Mm-hmm. And then the last part of my blog is I do answer people's questions, not necessarily in an advice format, but actually for a while I would ignore the questions in my inbox because I was so anxious about having to respond. And eventually I realized that I don't want to ignore people, but I also am not a professional. So I just give them little motivational responses back. And I do mention in my frequently asked questions that I can't answer certain questions just because I'm not a professional. But I have different responses from people that I will give different validating points to. And I also have this project that I started, I think in 2016, that was, I called it the Real People, Real Problem project. And that is sort of You're Not Alone project, where I make this little, I had a little survey that people could take, and then I would reformat it into a post. And it just has people listing different ways that their OCD manifests and what makes them feel better when their OCD acts up, and words of wisdom that they've gotten, that sort of thing. And nice. People can scroll through the post. I believe there's 55 entries right now, and they can just see, wow, OCD looks so different in everybody. And yet, wow, I do that. Or, oh, I feel that way sometimes. And it's really nice to have that sort of juncture between I'm not alone and everything looks different on different people, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. Well, look, thank you for sharing that. And it's this is OCD.blog, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yes. I'll put the link in the show notes anyway.
Awesome, thank you.
No worries. Cool, no, that's great. And it's, you know, you, like you said, you started in May 2015. My site started in August 2015.
Oh, so okay.
They're a very similar age. And I agree with you, there wasn't a great deal at the time on the internet. Gratefully and thankfully now there's so much, you know, there's a million and one OCD Instagram accounts or Facebook support groups or other blogs.
It's really great to see, honestly. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for being a pioneer in it.
Thank you.
No worries. So words of hope for those of OCD. Someone's just come up to you, said they have OCD, and they just asked for a few words of hope. What would you tell them?
I would say that OCD is kind of a tricky disorder where sometimes it'll feel like you're not getting better, or it'll feel like, oh, it's changing constantly. Whenever it evolves, I can't keep up. But you can. We are all so much stronger than we realize, and we can find our inner strength in so many different ways. Just remember to do the things that make you happy, and OCD can never take away from you the strength that you possess inside.
Just can't. Absolutely. And is there, do you have like a favorite resource, like a book, a video, anything like that?
I think my favorite resource for when I'm feeling really down about any sort of anxiety, I actually tend to go to YouTube, and there's a bunch of different videos that I'll go to that have like just reassuring words. I tend to go for like positive affirmation videos.
Okay, yeah.
But I also will sometimes even look at my own blog. Like genuinely, I go to the parts of Tumblr that are the positive posts, and I remind myself of my inner strength, and I remind myself that other people are struggling just like me.
Yeah.
And that feeling of not being so alone anymore is very powerful.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, the feeling of I'm it's not just me. There's a million and one other people who are experiencing somewhat similar right now or have done historically. Yeah. Okay, so let's say someone's just started therapy. Is there something that you wish you would have known at the start of your therapy for OCD that you'd like to share with others?
Yeah, I think everybody's going to say that when you're in the therapy, like, it's hard to feel like what people are saying about, oh, you know, you can do this and nothing bad will happen. Mm. It's easy to say that. It's really hard to feel that way.
Yeah.
It feels like if you fight this, something bad will happen, or something will get worse, or nothing's going to change. But one thing I do want to say is, one thing I was really afraid of was medication, actually. And I thought, this is going to change me. This is going to make me a different person. And I want to be who I am right now. And then if I look back at that person, I was different, but maybe I wasn't as happy as I am now, or I wasn't as myself as I am now, because I think medication doesn't change you into a person you aren't. It changes you and makes you the person you are, because OCD isn't all that you are.
Yeah.
And I think it gets dangerous when people do say, like, you know, you are not your OCD, because sometimes we do feel that way. At the same time, we aren't our OCD. And OCD is just one side of who we are as people. And I think sometimes it does feel like it defines us, but it doesn't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good point. Okay. Thank you. So if you could pick up the phone and call your 18-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Well, I think I'd say that I think at 18 years old, I was having a really difficult time. I had just graduated high school, and I actually went through a lot of really nasty friendship type breakups at the time, where I lost a lot of people in my life around 18 years old. And a lot of it was because they didn't really know how to handle my mental illness. And I would tell my 18-year-old self that you will find the people that know just how wonderful you are. And you will also never lose the support of your family, that they care so deeply about you. And I don't think I always realized that at the time, but they are my strongest allies, and they always will be. And I would also tell my 18-year-old self that there is strength in numbers, and by reaching out to more people, you actually are able to help yourself more. And by just shutting yourself inside your dorm room or any room, you're not actually making connections, and by losing out on very precious friendships and connections, you're losing out on ways to get better yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, good words. Okay, and you've got a billboard wherever you live, you put it. What do you want written on that billboard?
I think I would probably put something along the lines of, you are tough, because like life is tough, but you are tougher is usually what I put on my own personal blog, because I find that, you know, sometimes when we say we're so tough, we're so strong, we forget to mention that life is also really tough. Life is also really strong. And sometimes it feels like it's going to overpower us, but life is tough, but you are tougher.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Cool. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you wish you could have shared?
I don't think so. I think you've been very thorough. Yeah.
Cool. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your story so openly and talking about the good work you've done in advocacy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this podcast. Honestly, I love listening to it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So there you have it. Thanks a lot to Zoe for giving her time and sharing her story. And thanks to you guys for listening. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.